always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Wednesday afternoon by you guys. Today on the show, we're going to be diving into the mailbag, which is packed because I have not gotten to it in a week or two. Apologies for that. I have four questions, which is a lot for iTunes questions, because I try to spend a bunch of thought on those, because that's what I really ask you guys to do, right? Five-star topics there are guaranteed to get onto the show, and I try to, you know, do you guys service, you know, proper service when I answer those questions. So I got four questions from the iTunes mailbag. I'm going to be getting questions here from the live chat as it fills up. So if you guys have any questions or topics or anything like that, make sure you get those questions in sooner rather than later, because after I get through the iTunes questions, I will scroll up to the top of the chat and answer the questions that we get here in the order that we get them. The show is brought to you in video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA to get $50 worth of lineups when you sign up and play a $5 lineup using that code. Looking forward for the Lakers to get back in action so I can start giving out those picks again. That was really fun for a little stretch that we did it. Thanks to them for supporting the show. And let's go ahead and without any further ado, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, turn on notifications for YouTube, turn on notifications for the show. And then if you guys are listening in, to the show in the morning via podcast, please subscribe wherever you get those, preferably on Odyssey, but wherever you get them is perfectly fine with me. All right, ready, set, go. First question from iTunes comes from Lake Show Landon, who writes, "What are your thoughts on this? I've been thinking about how the NBA will not really want to shorten the season for money reasons. Do you think making the court larger could help with the injury problems? I think these are very large people that have evolved since the average NBA player from the 1960s. Do you think this theory could have any carry? No research of any sorts done on my end." So this is something that I have kind of wondered about before, that, you know, are these guys kind of bumping into each other, causing injuries, or avoiding bumping into each other, causing injuries? And I do think there is something potentially to the theory. But what I also think potentially here is that, like, if you major concern with the way that the sport is played nowadays is the amount of ground that everybody on the court has to cover. And that's because we are living in this pace and space era where, you know, guys have to close out to the 3-point line. They have to, you know, defend all the way down to the basket, right? Because the basket is also a critical area for your defense. And they have to get out in transition. They have to get back in transition. And it's just a lot that is asked of these guys. You talk about the evolution of the human body since the 1960s, but the evolution of the sport since the 1960s is just as, if not more, because you have it taking place alongside the evolution of the human body. The evolution of the sport is probably more concerning for what these guys' bodies get put through over the course of a season. So initially, it was something that I thought about. Maybe you spread out the court a little bit. These guys bump into each other a little bit more. Driving lanes widen a little bit more. which might lead to, you know, maybe a little bit less emphasis on breaking and lateral movement while you're also sprinting towards the basket. But then the other concern there is, well, we know that the league is just going to, it's kind of like when you over the course of your life, right? Over the course of adulthood, really, you start with like your studio apartment, then you go to like a one bedroom apartment with, you know, a little bit more cabinet space. And then you go to, you know, maybe you meet somebody and you go to a two bedroom apartment that has like the extra room to either entertain people, or like I had it as a studio, or at one point I remember Jen and I, when we first moved into our first two bedroom apartment together there in Brea, we tried to fit a pool table into the second bedroom because I had no earthly idea how much space a pool table, let alone trying to play pool, but a pool table took up. We tried and we made the best out of that situation. We had to, you know, use those tiny little sticks to try to play. If you didn't have anything other than like a diagonal shot long ways on the table. But so like we went from that, right? And then we rented, you know, from the two bedroom apartment, you go to maybe a small condo, and then from there you go to a small house. And then from there, you know, maybe if you've done well enough, you go to a bigger house and so on and so forth. And every time you move, you think to yourself, God, how did I get so much shit? And it's because typically, not everybody, but typically as you get more space, you fill that space with stuff. And I think basketball is very much the same way, where as the sport, if the sport were to grow the court, were to increase the floor space on that court, it would just get filled with more space, right? Guys would shoot from further out, which would force guys to close out to further. We've already seen guys shoot from further out over the years. And like, I remember when Chris Duhon used to do it for the Lakers, it was just like, what is this guy doing? And now everybody is shooting from way out there, right? And I just think that if you expand the court, you're asking these guys to cover that much more distance. And I think all of the gains that you might see from guys not bouncing into each other or avoiding bouncing into each other in tighter spaces, you would start to see more wear and tear as far as like, you know, trying to cover all of that space. Also, the NBA would never do it because, you know, the Lakers literally minutes before I went live here sent out an email about the extra courtside seats that they are implementing, and I think it's for the playoffs and then certainly moving forward. And if you expand the court, right, that means you are literally taking away like that first row seats. And one argument is that, like, well, maybe you take out that first row seats, but you're also potentially taking out the top row. The problem there is like the arenas aren't going to go in there and remove the top row. You're literally probably just go like that would cost more money. So you're probably just going to be sacrificing that front row of courtside seats. And those are the most expensive seats in the arena. And I just don't think that teams and owners are going to sign up to do that. It's a fascinating topic, though. It is something that I've thought about. Like one thing that Pete and I talked about years ago in terms of additional potential home court advantages. I like how baseball has like, you know, everybody has the same infield, but the outfield, you know, distances and fence distances are different from field to field and stadium to stadium. And I would like to see the NBA consider something similar like with that, but with like the 3-point line, where like the Lakers, for example, you know, they're a pretty good 3-point shooting team. So you still want to keep it as a weapon, but so like you wouldn't like move it to 50 feet out or whatever. But let's say for the Lakers, you bring that 3-point line in, and all of a sudden Rui's mid-range jumpers that he has become automatic at, now all of a sudden those become worth 3 points, and Rui becomes this hyper-efficient player, as well as, you know, what Austin can do in the mid-range and what Luka and LeBron can do in the mid-range. Now all of a sudden, and then you also have Luke Kennard as a potential threat, however far away from the basket that you want to get. He's also really good in the mid-range. And all of a sudden, the Lakers' offense just completely changes from an identity standpoint. And I would like to see what that would maybe look. Again, we're talking about things that would never happen, but that would be intriguing to me.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
End of the day, though, when it comes to trying to, have the league not suffer so many injuries over the course of the season, it starts with the schedule. Like it starts and ends there, frankly. And I know that the league is never going to cut down from 82 games because they're concerned about, revenue that is, you're listening to a show, right? That literally on the, podcast feed, you have a full episode and you have it cut down because that is one way to generate extra listens, right? A lot of podcast listeners don't want to listen to a whole conversation. They would rather go kind of topic by topic. And so I know that, sometimes adding additional opportunities to take in your content, in this case, in the NBA, your games, that is a concerning thing if you take that opportunity away from fans. But I also think that there is a law of diminishing returns in economics. And if I was to split the show into 5-minute increments and still have two ad breaks there, nobody would listen. That would become a ridiculous ask of the audience to tune into all of those things. And then it would also, just completely clog up the pod feed, and it would take away from the overall experience of listening to the show. And for the NBA, I think what they have basically done with 82 games is they have kind of clogged the pod feed with additional games that, yes, over the course of the season, that revenue matters, the TV revenue, the ticket revenue, the in-game revenue as well. Like that amount of money does matter. But if it's a diminished product and it also is leading to your stars basically struggling to play even 80% of your season, then you're actually hurting yourself there. So I actually think that there is a real argument to be made. And I think it's a lot easier to keep this argument hypothetical than it is to make it practical. But I do think there is an argument to be made here of, hey, isn't it possible you could generate more revenue by playing fewer games over the course of the season and those games feeling like more of an event, right? The NFL is kind of going in the opposite direction, where forever they had a 17-week season and teams played 16 games, right? Every team had a bye, and every single one of those games feels like an event. And the NFL is basically like asking itself right now, how far can we stretch this? Now, it's a lot easier to do this from the NFL standpoint than it would be from the NBA standpoint, where you would be making the season shorter, whereas in the NFL, you're making the season longer. But eventually, the NFL is also going to reach a point of diminishing returns, where they are going to basically expand from, you know, they've already expanded from 17 to an 18-week season. They're considering expanding even further. They're playing games, you know, on days other than Sundays and Thursdays and Mondays. You know, I think this upcoming season they're talking about, or if they haven't already just made the decision, they're going to play the day before Thanksgiving. So that means you'll have a Wednesday game, a Thursday game. They play games on Black Friday. So then you might have, so you'll have a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday, Monday week. For the, well, technically, you'll have a Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday week, and then Monday again for the following week. Like, are they going to see diminished returns by forcing everybody to sit around the TV or asking everybody to sit around the TV for every single one of those days? Like, I actually think Red Zone and the Sunday product is the perfect product, because on a Sunday, a lot of sports fans will just plop down on the couch for 8 hours of football. And the NFL is risking, you know, rocking the boat a little too much with this approach. And we'll see what the returns on those moves might be. But for the NBA, though, I do kind of think that if you limit the number of games that you shorten the season, you make more, those games now inherently matter more. You'll increase the likelihood that your guys will be fresher for those games. And hell, like, with playing fewer regular season games, you keep the in-season tournament, you keep the play-in tournament. And now all of a sudden, most of the games that a fan could turn into have real, or at least more real, stakes attached to them. And I think at that point, the sport would be in a healthier spot than where it currently stands with this 82-game season, where sometimes you have three games in four nights or four games in five nights, and guys are struggling to stay healthy. Guys are not, you know, eligible for awards at the end of the season because this the season itself is a stupid ask of its players. And you know, as much as fans, especially more old school fans, would say, buck up, millionaires, play the shooty hoops, their bodies are quite literally telling them, nope, we can't. And in the Lakers' case, they're, you know, Austin Reeves and Luka Doncic's bodies quit at the absolute wrong time. And now, during, you know, what would otherwise be the event for your sport, Adam Silver won't have a top three player available for the first round of the playoffs, and maybe not available at all for the playoffs if the Lakers get knocked out. Adam Silver won't have Austin Reeves. And by the way, these guys aren't going to be playing for, or are going to be unavailable for, the league's marquee team. And the league suffers when the Lakers don't play deep into the playoffs. And, you know, again, you talk about indirect costs and the analysis of those costs. This is something where Adam Silver should really, you know, ask himself, is it worth it? The revenue that you get on some random Wednesday in November, is it worth that revenue to take the hit that he is going to take these playoffs if Luka Doncic doesn't play in any of these games for the Lakers, or if the Lakers' playoff run is cut short by these injuries that are sustained solely because of how long and ridiculous this NBA season is? I don't think Adam Silver has the spine to try to convince his owners on this front. I think he's too weak a commissioner, and I don't think he's creative enough to think of things this way. But at the end of the day, it's his league that is suffering. And I know the league sent out their like ratings numbers and was like, this is the most that the league has been watched since whatever it was, 20 in the last 24 seasons or whatever it was. And it's like, for one thing, streaming numbers are always not like, they are not trustworthy numbers, right? Like Netflix is always talking about how all of these hundreds of millions of people are tuning in to these shows and stuff. And then they're also increasing prices because they can't afford, despite those large audiences, to continue to run all the content that they do. Had the league hit the ratings numbers that they keep on, or that they just told us today, all season, we would have heard a lot more about it over the course of the season than just right now, where they were like, yeah, 11 billion people watched us. It's like, what? I'm sorry, man. Like, I don't believe you on those numbers there. And it's cool that the NBA has a whole legion of journalists that they have paid over the course of the season that they can just tell, hey, can you quote tweet this? Can you make sure it's known that we rated the way that we did this year with these potentially fake and completely unprovable numbers? And those people who are employees of the league are going to say, well, yeah, if you tell me to. And that's what we've seen over the course of the day. So end of the day, there's a long rambling answer to this. I think that there are some fundamental issues here, foundational issues here with the league that all stem from the length of the season. And any other, you know, tanking solutions or, you know, star availability solutions or in-season tournament solutions, that's all, you know, putting makeup on the pig. At the end of the day, the problem is the pig. The problem is that, like, that pig ain't pretty. And then also really quickly, I know people always say, like, what if you just extend the season? What if you have the season extend so that you have fewer back-to-backs over the course of it? And, I think that's also a very practical solution here. But the problem there is that, like, the players union and league executives and even owners don't want to do that because they like their August. They like their like first week or so of September, you know, because you can go on those vacations, fully recalibrate, fully recover from the previous season. We saw the impact of not having a long enough off season that had on the 2020 and 2021 Lakers. Remember how injured that squad was? And it was a good team. I still believe in that collection of talent. And so you run into it, like, at the end of the day, like, this is a very arduous sport. Asking people to play 82 games of this very arduous sport puts them at risk for the playoffs at the end of the year. And then the story every year becomes more of who was healthy by the end of the season than it was who was the best team.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
All right, next question here comes from Bruin Writer 78. As much as I love Austin Reeves, he is sadly an 89 game player, regular season plus one playoff series in the current NBA environment. Here are his averages against the teams with elite perimeter defenders: Boston, Detroit, OKC, Orlando, and San Antonio. 19.8 points per game, 4.4 rebounds per game, and 4.6 assists per game, with 3.3 turnovers on 44-30-90 shooting with 124 defensive rating. So I share some of the concerns with Austin's limitations as an athlete, and I do think that those limitations are put on display in those games. I would also argue that all of the league its numbers get worse against the best defensive teams. That's what makes those teams so great defensively. So it's kind of hard to like cherry pick opponents and which player that we're talking about here, just in terms of like, if you're setting up your argument here. I'm not disagreeing with the basis of the argument. I just think it's a difficult argument to make statistically. I do think, so like one thing that I've been thinking about a lot over the course of like basically as we get ready for the offseason is the Bulls and the Hawks feel like two real possibilities for Austin as his next team. And the Hawks in particular, like the Bulls have the most money. The Hawks have a little bit less money, but the Hawks as a situation where you have all of that length and athleticism and physicality to surround Austin. So he becomes your engine and all of those other guys just kind of slot into roles around him and help make up for some of his defensive limitations. Like that's the type of team that Austin would theoretically thrive on. He is never going to be on that kind of a team in LA because the superstar next to him doesn't fit that archetype. And so like my point here is that like, I truly believe if you put Austin on the Atlanta Hawks right now, and even if you have to shed a little bit of salary and maybe, you know, some of their talent walks out the door so that Austin's, you know, impending salary fits into their cap structure. You put Austin on that Atlanta Hawks team, they become a top three team in the East. And they're pretty damn close to it already, right? Like I actually pick the Hawks to beat the Knicks in this upcoming series that they're about to play, and you add Austin to that, and now all of a sudden I think they jump into that category with, or that tier with Boston and with Detroit. You put Austin on Detroit even, right? And even if Cade stays, and now all of a sudden like Cade is more athletic than Luka is and can make up defensively for some of the things that Austin can't do. And if Austin is the secondary creator in Detroit, then they become a title favorite, I would even say. So like I truly believe that Austin is like a 2A, 2B creator on a team loaded with athleticism and physicality and length. Like we wouldn't be having these conversations about whether or not Austin can play in the playoffs. He would be able to play in those playoffs. The problem with the Lakers as they are currently constructed is he, you know, not only does he have Luka Doncic playing next to him, but like it's a somewhat diminished Marcus Smart, right? At this stage of his career, it's Rui Hachimura. It's Jake LaRavia. It's LeBron James at this point in his career. It's DeAndre Ayton. The Lakers don't have any of the kind of personnel with throughout their rotation that I would say athletically is the kind of, you know, athlete that I would prefer to have next to Luka and Austin. It's part of why, you know, when I hear the whole, like when I hear people talk about this, you know, this upcoming offseason like this.
Run it back, run it back, run it back, run it back, run it back.
I kind of roll my eyes because what are you running back? Like the Lakers over time, almost like systematically tore apart a championship identity and roster and all of that stuff and arrived at a completely different identity. And this identity where it's kind of soft, honestly, and the kind of defense that they play has to be a lot of smoke and mirrors. They don't play with a whole bunch of force, especially defensively. Like, I don't know that this identity has worked out too often in the playoffs. Even like the Showtime Lakers, you want to point to them as like a quote-unquote softer team. You had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar anchoring the defense as a rim protector. He was pretty damn good at that. You had guys like Michael Thompson being the kind of physical athlete that he was back then. You had James Worthy was an elite athlete for his time. You had Michael Cooper, who was one of the better perimeter defenders that the league saw in his time and, frankly, has really seen since. Byron Scott was a super athlete, even though he was kind of a combo guard. He was a super athlete, got out on the break and could move his feet defensively. And like Magic, while he wasn't obviously going to lock any kind of point guard opposition down, he was big and he could play physically down below. So like you go through the years of teams that won championships or teams that came up short, the 7 seconds or less Suns come to mind, right? Like people think about the Golden State Warriors as a softer team. Draymond Green is one of the dirtiest, nastiest, toughest defenders that the league has ever seen. And he was at the middle of a defense that had Andre Iguodala or Andrew Wiggins. Klay Thompson was an elite defensive presence on the wing who could also go out and space the floor. And their worst defender on the court that you would think, Steph Curry, was like, by the time the Warriors were really like a championship team, he was adequate. You know, he at least tried. But like the 7 seconds or less Suns, some of those Mavericks teams over the years, the Kings kind of come to mind as kind of a softer team. Those teams that like couldn't, if it absolutely came down to it, get a stop just man to man, like those teams, they have a ceiling to them. And I think as we approach this upcoming off season, the more that I really kind of think about it, the further I lean towards, you know what, March was fun, but let's go out there and let's get some dogs. Let's go out there. Let's get some defenders. Let's surround Luka and Austin and even LeBron, you know, depending on the number that he potentially comes back at, because, you know, of those three guys, he's clearly the best athlete still. Let's go out and get physical presences everywhere else to make up for what those guys cannot do defensively, or it would be unfair of them to ask of them defensively. And I, you know, as far as like, you know, identity and Austin and all this stuff, I think a lot of times the conversation about Austin has a lot more to do with the roster construction around him, even granting, by the way, that he does have limitations. This is why he's not a supermax player. He might be a max player. Maybe eventually he will be a max player this upcoming summer, and then we have to grade him on those standards. But to this point in his career, given the contracts that he's been on, he's been a freaking steal. And you know, some team out there, whether it's the Lakers, the Hawks, the Bulls, or some, you know, secret weapon team as we approach this upcoming summer, this dark horse team, some team is going to not only pay Austin, but also probably surround him with better athletes than the Lakers have had to this point. And at that point, we would be all kind of looking at it ourselves and the conversation that we've had about Austin and say like, okay, yeah, we kind of missed that one. The next question that we get here is from QBreezy12. With hindsight being 2020 and this season likely ending unceremoniously due to injuries, if this was actually a quote gap, unquote, year, would it have been a good idea to tank considering how strong the draft supposedly is? Well, the problem there is like as you say there, QBreezy, this is a hindsight being 2020 question. Nobody like would have been talking about tanking if not for Luka pulling his hammy and Austin straining his oblique. Like we would be talking about the Lakers as a title contender, one of the top four teams in the West and one of the top 5 to 7 teams in the league. We would be talking about the Lakers and their chances this year. So like, I don't really think that we need to, you know, entertain the notion of tanking. The other part, like the other reason that I don't think the Lakers would have ever tanked is because you had like we saw the Lakers statistically, they were very mediocre, right? Over the course of much of the season, they were hovering either slightly above or even at times below having a negative point differential. But in order to tank, you need to lose two everybody. You need to be like, not only do you need to lose, obviously, to the OKCs, the San Antonios, the Detroits, the Bostons, the Lakers, you know, over the course of the season as well. Not only do you have to lose to the good teams, but you also need to lose on occasion to the really, really bad teams. And the Lakers, by a function of having Luka, of having Austin, of having LeBron, short of doing the Utah Jazz thing and asking all of them to get elective surgeries in like on Christmas, I just don't see how the Lakers could have ever possibly been bad enough to get themselves a draft pick that would make me feel tanking was worth it. Now, you do have flattened odds, so maybe you like miss the playoffs on purpose and you get super duper lucky. But normally the teams that have this amount of talent and then intentionally miss the playoffs, the sports gods don't usually. You do have the Spurs, and I'll go to my grave believing that the Cooper flag thing was rigged. But like usually those teams that have this amount of talent and suck on purpose, they aren't rewarded in the lottery, right? Like the Utah Jazz, like they fell in the lottery last year. Good. I hope they do again this year. Let's see, who are some of the other really like the Nets, right, is another team that had enough talent, but then like did some shenanigans, and we'll see where they wind up. Like they tanked like crazy last year and had guys sitting for all sorts of reasons and walked away from that draft with like some decent prospects, but nobody like world changing. And I think that's probably how it would have played out for the Lakers. And then you would have said like, oh, great. So we wasted the age 27 season on Luka for like the equivalent of Rui Hachimura, who Rui has had a good career. Almost all NBA prospects, let alone human beings, would happily take Rui's NBA career and his career earnings. But would that have been worth it to you to tank while you have LeBron, while you have Luka, while you have Austin? I don't think it would have felt worth it at the end of that season. Last question here from the iTunes mailbag. Viva Exceptionalism writes, Anthony, love the show as always. Thank you very much. You've advocated bringing LeBron back next season. However, I would be concerned that LeBron would say that next season is his last and he wants and is entitled to a farewell tour. My concern would be that would be a circus and a distraction from the pursuit of a championship. What do you think? So I get where you're coming from. I share some of the concern, but like you also have to take into account here, like, have you seen how hard LeBron has been playing lately? Did you see how willingly he accepted the kind of third on the 2A, 2B kind of role that he did in March while the Lakers looked their best? This dude wants to win. And he's good enough to want to win. Like, we think of farewell tours as like Kareem's, right? Where he's literally sitting in a rocking chair that one of the teams gave him. We think of Kobe's farewell tour, right? And you know, how detrimental that was to winning that season, right? Not that the Lakers cared about winning. They needed to be bad so that they could keep their draft picks and all that stuff. But still, like, it was just like it was ended great. Don't get me wrong. But I think a lot of people, by way of it ending great and obviously by way of losing Kobe the way that we did, have kind of rewritten the history of what that felt like in the moment. And it wasn't a very fun season. And then, you know, like Magic obviously never had a farewell tour because, well, he came back. And there were some moments, you know, but overall, like, he clearly wasn't Magic Johnson anymore. Not that anybody could have realistically expected him to be Magic Johnson still, as he battled HIV. you could go through like Michael Jordan's. Tim Duncan didn't really have one. He just kind of stepped away. But even he in his last season was clearly diminished. LeBron isn't that, right? Like LeBron isn't Wizards MJ. LeBron isn't, you know, rocking chair Kareem. LeBron isn't Robert Parrish, you know, when he was finally ready to step aside. This is a still very productive player who LeBron is good enough right now that I would probably say the majority of Lakers fans are comfortable pinning their hopes and dreams in this first round to the Lakers and confidently doing so because LeBron is LeBron still. Think about that. And this is a guy, by the way, that the Lakers think that they can just replace if he walks out the door this year, which, again, that's why I've been pushing back on this, is you can't have that both ways. You know, and it'll be really curious. I'll be really curious to see what the reaction would be internally to LeBron, you know, holding this ship together like Spider-Man, right? You know, and somehow keeping these things afloat so that the Iron Man in this case would be Luka, and I guess Austin is a second Iron Man who comes in and puts the ship back together, and they're able to actually keep this thing afloat. Like if the Lakers can somehow do that, and LeBron is able to be at the center of that, then I don't need to hear anybody try to argue that LeBron shouldn't be back next year, let alone that he should be playing on like a fucking minimum. Get out of here with that. Like, I'm sorry, the season that he has had, his willingness to accept whatever role that is necessary of him, and then if maybe, just maybe, he's able to win this just Herculean underdog series on his own, basically, like that's a different caliber of player. And I don't think he would diminish so much over the course of one summer that all of a sudden we're talking about a farewell tour that would involve him just chucking up 30 shots a night on a bad team. You know, I don't think he would even want that. I don't think he would return to a farewell tour just for that. Now, you could talk about the potential distractions of like a whole bunch of cameras being around just in case he makes a documentary of his last season. I get that. But like even there, Spectrum has cameras around this team at all times, basically, for their behind the scenes. I'm sorry, Spectrum, call it backstage Lakers. Like this team isn't like, it wouldn't be like a documentary camera would show up and they'd be like, what is that? I have not seen one of those before. So like even that as a concern, you know, I wouldn't really share. So I don't know. I can't think of very many arguments against bringing LeBron back next year on a reasonable salary. And, you know, now if we're talking like 55 plus million bucks a year, obviously I'm against that. I don't think that would do the Lakers any justice. And I don't think that's the kind of contract that the Lakers would be willing to give him. He is probably looking for something in that $30 to $40 million range. That's probably still a little steep for the Lakers internally. If he and the Lakers can agree on a deal in that $20 to $30 million range, that isn't insulting to him, but also allows the Lakers to build in this, you know, in their first real attempt at winning a championship with Luka Doncic at the center of the organization, then that would be, I think, best case scenario for everybody. LeBron gets to, if he wants to play his last season with his son in LA, the city that his wife wants to be in, he would give himself a legitimate opportunity to win himself a championship in that final year. Like I that to me is the scenario here that everybody should be pulling for. And for LeBron to still be at this stage of his career good enough that we could pin our hopes on him beating the Houston Rockets basically single-handedly, that's insane, man. And the people who were just like, get him out of here, like, it's not basketball when you're making that claim. There's something else going on there, whether it's, you know, any number of factors. But it's not a strictly basketball thing when you're trying to tell me that this guy's got to go. Like, absolutely not. Let's see. The Next one here was going to come from the chat. So Gabe Rocks one. Thank you for the chat. I'd rather keep 82, but eliminate the back-to-backs. Personally, I don't mind watching the deeper parts of the rosters playing in some games. I get not everyone likes ball that much, though. Well, yeah, and then well, the league is thinking about expanding, so you're talking about deeper parts of the roster that we'd be playing in some of these games. I would hope that, like, with expansion fees, with, you know, the additional revenue over the course of the season from two additional teams, that the league would more seriously consider shortening the season, right? You could shorten the season at that point, and by adding two additional teams, have roughly the same number of games over the course of the season in totality as you would if, you know, 30 teams played 82. Maybe that's the argument here as the league, you know, prepares for expansion and stuff like that. One of the benefits could be fewer games over the course of the season, more teams playing fewer games. Like, that would be something that I would be intrigued by. I'm with you on the back-to-backs, and I'm with you on the, you know, like, expanding the season. I just, that's not something that the players union or frankly, anybody who actually works in the league is all that interested. I would be for it because there is nothing that hurts more than like looking at my listening numbers in August and then September. You know, I can't be that selfish, I guess. All right. The next question here comes from Daruku995. The problem with today, no one wants to watch old dudes barely trying. Everyone wanted to watch Kobe and Jordan be psycho and try to win every game. Yeah. Although, like, you know, nostalgia makes us remember things a little differently. Kobe did plenty of pointing at rotations that maybe he should have made towards the end of his season, his career. Same goes for Michael, right? Like, by the time, like, Michael's kind of tough because he walked away in his prime twice, you know? And then when he came back as a Wizard, there was plenty of, like, not great rotation defense from Michael on a not great Wizards team. You know, look, go back and actually watch. Like, I know that this is always the response from people like me who, you know, say that the league is still rather good. But go back and actually watch even playoff games and how little those guys are moving on the weak side on defense or even on the weak side on offense. Like, look how much more simple the sport is back then and what that meant. And also, like, where those guys are shooting from. And what that meant was a lot less running over the course of those games. Those are even playoff games. And you compare that to, like, a random night, you know, like those games last night, right? Those playing games last night, those technically speaking weren't even playoff games. And those guys were fucking battling, man. Those guys were getting after it. And, you know, you compare that to finals games, from long enough ago, and it's just a completely different sport. And I think the league needs to adjust to the way that the sport is being played now. Now, you could literally adjust the way that the sport is played by trying to limit the number of three-pointers that teams take, by, you know, bringing back a little bit more physical defense that would force guys to maybe run less fast as frequently, and cover some, you know, a little less ground over the course of those games. I know some teams are getting smarter where they are expanding their rotations and you're playing fewer minutes over the course of the game, but you're playing harder within those minutes. That might be the direction that the league goes as it evolves to keep up with the evolution of the sport. But end of the day, though, like, you know, the whole, like, I always kind of push back a little bit about, you know, against nostalgia because it does quirky things to the brain. Not to say that Michael didn't play hard. I don't want to get taken out of context there, but Michael played plenty hard. And Kobe played plenty hard, but like they also weren't closing out and guarding, you know, in the ways that these guys have to guard. Let's see. I am going to kick you out because you were annoying yesterday. There you go. G-Dog 28G, Rob Pelinka will build a contender when LeBron is gone. He's keeping him from having a fifth ring. Couldn't I say the same about LeBron, right? Like, couldn't I say that, like, Rob Pelinka has kept, like, and wouldn't that be a fairer statement that, like, Rob has actually kept LeBron from winning a championship? More so than LeBron has kept Rob from competing for a championship. Like, that's, I don't think that's even close. Rob gave up on the Lakers or on the LeBron and AD combination, I think, like 3 years too soon. And you know, there was that reporting that that ESPN did about like some of the ill will that like members of the front office and the organization felt towards LeBron and Clutch because of the fallout from the Russell Westbrook trade, a trade that, by the way, Rob Pelinka heavily, heavily pushed for as well. Like this notion that LeBron has been anything other than an absolute heaven sent presence to the Lakers, especially compared to the idiocy that Jeannie Buss has enabled, whether it was by appointing Magic Johnson in the first place or giving him the, you know, the second in command of Rob Pelinka, somebody who was actively trying to, you know, take Magic's job while Magic was still there. Like, one day, a full story will be told about some of the bullshit that LeBron had to deal with while he was trying to, you know, fend off Father Time. Like, I'm sorry, man. This was never a Rob Pelinka, like, man, I sure wish I could contend. I just happen to have LeBron over there. Like, say that out loud. Say that out loud. Listen to yourself say it. Even more importantly, say it to another human being who knows what you're watching and see where you guys wind up in that conversation. This LeBron has never been the problem in this organization. I will agree that like LeBron pushing for Russell Westbrook in the first place was a disaster. I will agree that like Bronny being in the organization and taking up a roster spot for as long as he has kind of sort of stung a little bit, but that's also only one roster spot. Like if Rob Pelinka drafted better, nobody would care that Bronny was the 15th man on the team. The problem is that Rob has been a bit of a disaster on the in the draft for long enough that the Lakers don't have any, you know, up and coming youth who would be filling in the gaps right now. Also, like Rob's inability to generate assets. Like there was a conversation in my mentions, or there has been this conversation in my mentions, because I sent out a tweet last night that the Lakers letting Jordan Goodwin walk for nothing has not aged well, right? And people are like, well, that's how we got Marcus Smart. It's like, why do you do that? Like, why do you land on defending this guy naturally? Why is that your only instinct here? And the explanation there is because, like, we as sports fans want the sports team that we root for to be good and to be smart so that we could enjoy rooting for them more. And they will, you know, if they're good and they're smart, there's a better chance and a higher likelihood that they're going to succeed. And we prefer to root for teams that succeed. But also we have to like come to grips with the fact every so often that like the person that we're rooting for might not be very good, right? We arrived there with Luke Walton. We arrived there with Darvin Ham. I never honestly arrived there with Frank Vogel. and they got rid of him anyway, which tells me the guy who got rid of him, probably not very good. The guy who got rid of him because he couldn't make Russell Westbrook work and hired Darvin Ham because he told him he would make Russell Westbrook work, not very good. And so like this, like the whole, we did this with, like, I remember this was a conversation when Alex Caruso was let to walk and for nothing, you know, and we're talking about asset management here too, by the way. But when Caruso was like willing to take a little bit less in order to stay with the Lakers and Rob was still like, nah, vaya con Dios, sir. What? And then because a couple years later, the Lakers get a different white guy, people are like, well, honestly, do we need Alex Caruso, all NBA defender? Huh? Why do you do that? Why do you jump immediately to some not linked explanation to make you feel better about the dumb thing that this guy did before? Why is that a thing? You know, and like to explain the Jordan Goodwin thing, the Lakers knew that they were going to be up against it, up against the hard cap with him on the books. And they knew he had a non-guaranteed contract. And even if you think that eventually you might have to let him walk for nothing, then trade him, get something for him, right? Like, or do a little bit of work ahead of time so you have enough assets so that if you need to make a trade, like the Oklahoma City Thunder almost never lose somebody for nothing. If they are going to lose somebody, they get something. Even if it's like a fake second round pick, they get something. And so like with Jordan Goodwin and with Alex Caruso and with, you know, any number of like, Jay Huff is another example, Scottie Pippen Jr. Like, you know, and I think we're facing that same situation with Drew Timmy here moving forward. Like with these guys who are capable NBA players that the Lakers had in house and then lose for nothing, that hurts you in building around LeBron James. That's not LeBron hurting Rob Pelinka. That's Rob Pelinka not being good at his job, hurting LeBron James. I don't even know why I've spent so much time on this conversation. It's a ridiculous premise. All right. Let's see. I got to get out and cook dinner here. So I am going to go ahead. I'll answer one more. So Jimmy James writes, Jerry was always right with the shit show comment. I was always Team Jerry. So here's the thing. And I wasn't going to say this to Ryan West on the show because it's a documentary remembering his since passed father. But like, there is a narrative about Jerry that he can be difficult to work with, that he can be a bit of an asshole, that he can be, you know, and he talked about it. If you listen to, like, if you read between the lines of what Ryan was saying, that bluntness that he talked about, that like brutal honesty that he talked about, that's Jerry being Jerry. And so the thing with like the Lakers leadership, basically since Dr. Buss started to get old, got sick, and then eventually passed away, is there has been, it's become so clicky and it's become so segmented and it's become so high school drama bullshitty that like the focus far too often as an organization became everybody getting along, you know, unanimity. Nope. Didn't say that one right. Unanimous decisions, right? Everybody rowing in the right direction, and not like, you do want everybody rowing in the right direction or in the same direction. That is something that you want eventually, but that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody's agreeing on everything all the time. Look, Raj is officially part of the show. Harrison is officially a part of the show. My producer Brian is now officially a part of the show. If I wanted to take this show in a completely different direction and they didn't push back on it, if I was like, you know what, guys, I know that this is a Lakers channel and I know that we generate our revenue here by talking about sports, by talking about Lakers. But you know what I want to turn this thing into? I want to dance in front of the camera. You know what, like Harrison or Raj or Brian would say to me? They'd be like, what? No. No. What are you doing? Harrison and I built Silver Screen and Roll to where it is now together. And over the course of our time building Silver Screen and Roll together, there were plenty of like disagreements that he and I had about the direction of that website and the content therein, you know? And it wasn't like he and I weren't disagreeing because we didn't like each other. We just disagreed about like some of the decisions that we needed to make, and we would have constructive conversations. Sometimes you have to walk away from the conversation and come back to it. Sometimes you have to compromise, or sometimes one side has to just buck up and say, you know what? Your call, man. And like that's part of being an adult. Jen and I don't agree on every single decision that we make, whether it comes to finances or raising the kids or what to eat that night, right? But being part of being an adult is understanding that, yeah, like people can disagree and people can hash it out. And sometimes it can be a full-on knockdown dragout. But so long as everybody is actually rowing in the same direction and actually invested in the success of whatever it is that they're working together towards, then you can run a, you know, stable, productive, and growing family. You can oversee the growth of a project and everything that it would eventually become. You can just win while disagreeing from time to time. And we saw it with Pat Riley. We saw it with Jerry West. We saw it with Ryan West. We saw it most recently with the Bus Brothers, right? With Jesse and Joey. And rather than learn to disagree and have constructive conversations and get back to working together and learn to work together, rather than, you know, establishing those habits, far too often under whether it was Jim Buss or Jeannie Buss's stewardship, right? Mitch Kupchak, another guy who they just told go away. Like, rather than learn to work together while you disagree, the instinct far too often is, nah, just go away. And then the circle gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And I'm really happy that Jeannie Buss sold and in is stepping Mark Walter, whether it's sooner or later. And those circles will start to grow back out and the organization will grow back out. And those conversations that involve disagreement sometimes will take place again and become productive and constructive. And like Jerry West is known for, you know, being a little rough around the edges, but any organization that says to itself, yeah, we're better off without Jerry West, is a stupid organization. Any organization that Jerry West is like, hey man, I'd like to come over and work with you guys, and said, and that organization says, nope, stay over there, man. Stupid organization, right? And like, it would be like, imagine if like Bill Simmons, for some reason, knocked on my door right now and was like, hey man, I like what you're doing with your show. I have a couple of tips on how to grow this thing. Maybe we should sit down and have a productive. And if I was to be like, no, man, you're a Celtics fan, I would be stupid there. That guy understands this industry and has the ability and the relationships throughout this industry to help this show. And yeah, he and I don't agree on everything, but at the end of the day, I would be a dumbass to be like, no, Bill Simmons, please go away. Right? Like that's the organization that the Lakers had become, and I'm happy that they're moving away from. All right, that is going to do it here for this episode. Thank you very much, everybody, for the questions and the comments. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please share the podcast, turn on notifications, all that good stuff. If you're listening in the morning via podcast. Please subscribe wherever you get them, preferably Odyssey. Anywhere matters. Anywhere is fine. And yeah, so tomorrow, let's see, tomorrow is Thursday. I believe we're recording an episode of the Great Western Forum tomorrow, so keep an eye out for that. So that'll either run tomorrow evening or Friday afternoon. If it does run Friday afternoon, then I'll figure out something to do tomorrow. And until the next time you guys hear from us, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you guys later.